Welcome back everyone to the Damage Report. It's Friday. Let's get this week over with Brett Ehrlich.
Oh my God, you know what you guys should do if you want to have a great time on a Friday? Watch Happy Half Hour here on the Young Turks Network. Oh, we have a great guest. We have Jocelyn Donahue. I have said Jillian Michaels almost.
It's Jillian Anderson. Yeah.
Jocelyn Donahue, who was in House of the Dead, which is one of Asher's favorite movies ever.
Yeah.
And then she's in the upcoming sequel to The Shining.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's definitely going to be a big one.
House of the Devil.
So definitely watch that later on. Before that though, watch this. You're off to a great start in that regard, but you should keep going with it. You know, stick with it, even if every instinct you have is saying to change the channel. So we got a lot that we're going to be talking about today. We've got some updates on the Ukraine situation. We're gonna do like 10 minutes on this. It's not even gonna cover everything crazy that's come out in the past week, but I'm reaching my limit on being able to talk about it. So after that, we're gonna transition to a bunch of interesting topics. We've got Kevin Cook, CEO of Bee Golden, a honey manufacturing company, on to talk about the plight of bees, why we should care about the fact that bees are getting decimated, or worse than decimated, actually. Then AOC versus Trump. That is going to be fun. A gigantic hoax perpetrated on AOC by the right wing. We've got Maxine Waters talking about Donald Trump inspiring threats against her and others. And then the development of lock him up chants. What will happen when people start chanting those at Democratic candidates events? We will see with a test run.
Was your worse than decimated reference less than 10% of bees? Is that what you're saying? Or were you saying?
Well, decimated, right, would be
1 in 10?
Yeah. Okay. This is worse.
Worse than 1/10%.
Right?
Gotcha. No, that's, I was pretty certain.
That's the specific decimated.
You were making an etymological reference to the root word of decimated.
Yes.
And
even
though
that's not how the word is used anymore.
I know, but yeah. Good for you.
Is it though?
Yeah.
Is it good for me? Anyway, certainly not good for the runtime of the show. So we should probably move on because there's a lot to get to. So we're going to jump into Donald Trump and impeachment. Those two things, they go together like peanut butter and jelly. Donald Trump under a lot of pressure. And in the past 24 hours, it got way worse really fast with a bunch of stories being dropped. We're not even gonna talk about the second whistleblower, by the way, having to do with interfering with the audits of his taxes. That's as much as we're gonna say because it's just too much. So let's talk about some more stuff that came out. You've heard about his call with the Ukrainian president where he pushed for investigations of his political opponents. Well, it turns out he doesn't always just call the Ukrainian president to push for that sort of thing. Sometimes he mixes it up and he calls the president of China. So during a phone call with President Xi on June 18th, Trump raised Joe Biden's political prospects as well as those of Senator Elizabeth Warren, who by then had started rising in the polls, according to two people familiar with the discussion. And we don't know for sure everything that happened in that conversation. This is not one of the transcripts that we have yet. But if you want to know what sort of transcript it was immediately taken and put into that high security server where the rest of his conversations are hidden. So I can't say for sure that in that call he pushed for an investigation of Elizabeth Warren. He did apparently push for an investigation of Joe Biden, a move that startled Chinese officials who say they have little interest in becoming embroiled in a US political controversy. So on top of him admitting on TV yesterday morning that he wants China to investigate them, he apparently has been pushing for it behind the scenes for a few months at least.
There's an amazing interaction with Jim Sciutto and Peter Navarro this morning on CNN where Jim Sciutto's like, listen, I've talked to you many times about how China is terrible and you've confirmed that. And as soon as Peter Navarro realizes that this is going where anyone's intuition would lead them, why are you asking the Chinese government for help in your political scandal investigation?
Yeah.
The guy's like, this is a witch hunt. Navarro, this is a witch hunt. It is one of the most magical meltings of a person on television and devolving into absolute nonsense. And that's because there is no defense.
Yeah.
Like the allegory is, you know that song, I Shot the Sheriff,
but I
did not shoot the deputy.
This is
Trump going like, I shot the sheriff. And I think the deputy's son did something with Ukraine.
Yeah.
And then it's like, could someone look at, oh no, another sheriff.
Exactly.
Oh, call China, call, do an investigation. There's another sheriff. He keeps shooting the sheriff over and over again and admitting to it.
That's true.
And they want you to focus on this other issue
the
of
whistleblower.
Like, oh, maybe we could look into the people who might be interested in investigating the deputy. That's not it. There is a very big, real crime that he's already admitted to.
Yeah.
And everything else either proves that or is a distraction from it. There's nothing out there that ever disproves this accusation to which he has already admitted.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is, like, we've gone over the use of misinformation and confusing people about this, but today on the most recent edition of Chopper Talk, he said, and by the way, nobody ever talks about my call with the Ukrainian president. They don't talk about it.
They do. It's out there. You admitted
it. That's what started the whole thing.
You submitted a partial summary of it, but the quotes.
We've talked about it on the show.
Everyone talks about it.
We are right now. But anyway, my point is that the strategy has just become really repetitive and predictable. Just take a truth and just say the opposite of it. That's all he does. He tweets or he says during Chopper Talk the opposite of what we know to be true. And unfortunately, turns out pretty good strategy because 30% of the country is like, yes, I believe you, not my lying eyes, ears, and brain. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there is more to this. So the interesting thing as more and more of this comes out is that basically everyone other than Donald Trump in the US and in these other countries seems to have gotten that this was wildly inappropriate and potentially illegal, even people who don't exist in our legal system. So one Trump ally outside the White House described receiving a message from Chinese government officials asking if Trump was serious when he suggested China open an investigation into Biden. The response, investigating corruption is an easy way to earn goodwill with Trump. And once again, you see the conflation of investigating corruption with investigating my specific political opponent. So we have an amazing update on that little juxtaposition in a bit. But you also have, and again, we have to gloss over some of these details because there's too much. Two of President Trump's top envoys to Ukraine worked on a statement for the country's new president in August that would have committed Ukraine to pursuing investigations sought by Mr. Trump into his political rivals, according to three people briefed on the effort and documents released Thursday night. So behind the scenes, they and some in Ukraine were working on the statement that hypothetically would have locked them into the course of investigating Joe Biden. That was before we actually heard about the story initially.
Yes, so all of the direct plans revolve around a quid pro quo being, can you please investigate the president, former vice president, and then we'll talk.
Yeah, exactly. And so, look, in terms of the corruption thing, that's my favorite part of this. So I want to jump ahead to that. Unfortunately, on Trump here. Trump wants you to believe that this whole thing is just about corruption, fighting corruption, and he is trying to phrase it that way. This morning, Donald Trump tweeted, as president, I have an obligation to end corruption, even if that means requesting the help of a foreign country or countries. It's done all the time. This has nothing to do with politics or a political campaign against the Bidens. This does have to do with their corruption. So it's not about Biden, it's about corruption. Biden's just one instance of it, man. He can give you so many, which is why this morning during Chopper Talk, he was asked if he's ever asked for a corruption investigation of someone who is not his political opponent. And he said, you know, we would have to look. It would be one thing if on the phone call you can't come up with a single instance of corruption that does not involve one of your highest profile political opponents. But if you, 2 weeks into an impeachment inquiry, still haven't come up with one example of corruption that does not involve your political opponents, that should be, I mean, look, it's obvious for us what's going on, but more and more, I would have to imagine that the Trump supporters in the Republican Party and the media have got to be getting frustrated with his inability to give them just a little bit of ammunition to defend him with.
I listened to Fox News this morning, and it isn't stopping them.
It isn't stopping them?
It is exactly the echo chamber that you think it is. Like last night at the end of Hannity, all it was talking about Hillary Clinton. Literally, they did a whole segment about Hillary Clinton in 2016 and Hillary's appearance on Maddow. And these people who say that we don't want to relitigate the 2016 election, get out there and talk about Hillary Clinton. And one of the amazing moments was when Mike Huckabee says, you know, I know why I lost, and she needs to admit this. The reason why I lost my elections is more people voted for the other guy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, more people voted for her than voted for him, so that doesn't even hold. Yeah. But with this, it's extremely frustrating because the legal argument that they have is we're investigating corruption. That's what they're trying to say. They can't come up with anyone besides Biden to talk about.
Yeah. Whether the example is Ukraine or China.
But even if you want to investigate Biden's corruption, there's a law saying that Trump can't ask for that. There are other ways to do that besides this.
By the way, the DOJ could investigate
it. The Department of Justice can absolutely do that on itself. But this way of doing it itself, even if that's your legal framework, which I would say is a baddie legal framework, that doesn't hold up. You need to go through another way. And then the other argument they're making is essentially, and you hear this when they're interviewed, they're saying like, I guess Biden is his political opponent. Mm-hmm. They need to convince the American people that it's merely a coincidence that Biden is the chief political rival in terms of polling data and just the general framing of the election. And that's an insane thing to want people to believe.
Yeah, if you're a defender of the president, it is on you to pretend that you're stupider than he is. You have to make these arguments. And that is a fairly low bar. Now, also we have text messages, incredibly damning text messages. We can't go through all of them. They are available. There's a lot. We're gonna go through a few that stand out to me. These are generally between Secretary of State, Department of State diplomat Bill Taylor and Ambassador Gordon Sondland, ambassador to Ukraine. So here we have Taylor saying, are we now saying that security assistance and White House meetings are conditioned on investigations? To which Sondland answers, call me. So if the answer is no, it's shorter than call me, you could just say it. But the thing about a phone call versus a text message is one leaves a paper trail, the other does not, presumably.
Yeah, he might as well have said, you got Snapchat?
Yeah, exactly.
You got Snapchat.
Can you tick or talk me? 8 days later, Taylor wrote, as I said on the phone, I think it's crazy to withhold security assistance for help with a political campaign. Sondland responded by denying that this was the case and urging him not to text about the matter anymore. So again, Sondland's like, he might throw up some resistance to the narrative, but his main point is stop texting me about this. Stop putting this down in a way that can be tracked. And in fact, it ends up being tracked. Taylor expresses concerns, saying he heard that, quote, President Zelensky is sensitive about Ukraine being taken seriously, not merely as an instrument in Washington domestic re-election politics. So again, as these diplomats are being pushed to put pressure on the Ukrainian president, they get what is being done here. And apparently the Ukrainian government does as well. Sondland responds to that saying it's important to, quote, get the conversation started and the relationship built, irrespective of the pretext. I am worried about the alternative. I don't even know what that means, the alternative part. Now, a couple more, really fast. So in terms of quid pro quo, it was obvious from the first summary transcript, people are pretending that it's not, but just in case that wasn't enough, we do have more. So in an interaction, we can bring this up. Volker, another individual in these texts says, good luck, thanks, heard from White House. Assuming President Z convinces Trump he will investigate, quote, get to the bottom of what happened in 2016, we will nail down date for visit to Washington. Good luck, see you tomorrow. So he will get a visit to the White House if he nails down that he will do this. Again, this isn't just, I need you to do me a favor though, where you can sort of grammatically link the two. This is an explicit recognition that a trip to the White House to meet Trump is contingent on investigating Joe Biden and, you know, what happened in 2016, the right-wing conspiracy theories about a server. And then in terms of the trying to get rid of the paper trail, acknowledging how bad this looks, one more interaction. About a 4.5 hour gap after some of the earlier texts that we talked about, Sondland writes, Bill, I believe you are incorrect about President Trump's intentions. The president has been crystal clear, no quid pro quos of any kind. The president is trying to evaluate whether Ukraine is truly going to adopt the transparency and the reforms that President Zelensky promised during his campaign. I suggest we stop going back and forth by text. If you still have concerns, I recommend you give Lisa Kenna or S, that's Pompeo, a call to discuss them directly. So after a period in which either just time passed or maybe Sondland talked to some people, figured out, I need to get on the record saying there's no quid pro quo, and then we have to stop texting about this.
This is, and we have to keep in mind like the entire framework. First of all, the thing, the transcript, the memo of the call, that is a crime. That is breaking campaign finance law, soliciting a thing of value from a foreign actor. That is one big crime. That is a main crime that we have confirmed happening.
Yeah, and they confirmed it.
He confirmed it, he admitted to it. That's not okay. And the question is why? And this revolves around essentially what Lindsey Graham was saying back in the 90s. He's like, I have to impeach a president and remove them from office if they're doing things that are reflective of the kind of person who should not be president of the United States. Mm-hmm. And that also relates to what a perfect phone call would be. He's like, I had a perfect phone call with the Ukraine president. A perfect phone call with the Ukraine president is something like this. Listen, Congress gave me the okay to change the way we support you militarily if and only if you do things that benefit the American people. Mm-hmm. That's a perfect call. And then Zelensky says, yes, we'll do that. Here's, by the way, when I come to Washington, D.C., I'll stay at the Radisson. And Trump's like, great, because otherwise that's an emoluments violation. That's a perfect call.
That sounds good.
But what happened was, instead of agreeing to all this stuff so that it can benefit, that would benefit the American people, and asking for things that would benefit the American people, Trump asks for things that benefit himself. And the thing he holds hostage is his supporters' tax dollars. He's saying, I'm not gonna give you aid, but I will give you aid, which is Trump supporter tax dollars, if you investigate my political opponent. That is corruption. That's the definition of corruption, is someone using their position of power, not to benefit the people who gave him that power, that's the voters, but rather to benefit himself. And he keeps doing it over and over again. We have proof of that. That is the main crime. This is the other thing. Their main defense for like a week and a half was there's no quid pro quo. This is proof of the quid pro quo.
Over and over and over.
And everyone who's saying it's not also sounds like the husband who's cheating on his wife who tells his mistress to stop texting him.
Exactly, yeah. If they're still denying it, it's because they don't care whether the president committed crimes.
Yeah.
It's just as simple as that. Okay, take a short break. We'll be back in just a bit.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Sometimes a threat to literally the smallest things can have massive ramifications for those of us higher up on the both figurative and literal food chain, and bees are an amazing example of that. Joining us to break down the current plight of bees is CEO and co-founder of Bee Golden, Kevin Cook. Welcome to the studio.
Hi, welcome. Thank you.
Glad to have you here. So I have heard that bees are having a rough time of it.
You would be correct.
So how bad is it? How bad has the last year or so been for bee populations?
It has been astronomically bad. So we are facing what would be considered a catastrophic ecological collapse of bees worldwide and domestically. So what we're experiencing is something called CCD, or colony collapse disorder. So colony collapse disorder is, it's a range, it's a host of things creating what we see as a perfect storm for decimating the honeybee population. A lot of those contributing factors, you know, really play into the larger agricultural industry, period. One of them being pesticides, insecticides, herbicides, things of that nature. And so we've kind of stepped back and looked at the problem. And, you know, in 2008, CCD kind of came out and it was, you know, what's really going on? And then as they started to investigate different areas, we started to see the big picture come out. And it's been bad.
Yeah, and I mean, I think I saw in some of the materials you provided that over the last, just the last winter, something like 40% were eliminated.
That's even higher. We've seen up to 80 and 90% of losses in colonies.
Yeah, and look, we were talking during the break about, you know, the amount of birds, forest creatures that had died. And, you know, when you see things like 40, 50% over the course of half a century, here we're talking about, you know, like while we were waiting for the next season of The Good Place to come out, like
absolutely.
That was like, it's such a short time span. And just to be clear, you sort of alluded to this, but this isn't just a California thing. This isn't just a US thing. We're seeing this
across the globe.
Are there areas where they're taking efforts? They're doing something differently and they're resistant to these deaths?
So, I mean, yes and no. Mm-hmm. So the powers that may be seem to be hindering the process. But independent scientific associations and beekeepers, you know, worldwide are pushing forward efforts to try to mitigate some of these issues. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the concerns we've had is with the EPA mm-hmm. and their sort of lack of response to true and real scientific data. So we have something that we've seen as a significant issue, and these are pesticides, two of which are astronomically bad for bees. Mm-hmm. One of them has been around for quite some time. They're called neonicotinoids. Mm-hmm. Neonicotinoids are sort of a new nicotine, so to speak, type of chemical. The next one is sulfoxaflor, which is a sulfoxamine.
I've read about that one.
Sulfoxaflor is almost identical in what it does to pollinators as a neonicotinoid. And their conditional registration of this was based off of scientific research done by the companies who are putting them into the market.
Yeah.
Sulfoxaflor was produced by formerly known Dow Agrochemicals, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we see is those are supposed to, you know, coat the plant and create, you know, this environment for insect, you know, less environment. But what we're seeing is they're doing substantial damage to the pollinators.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll return in just a minute to what the EPA and the Trump administration is doing in this area. But just in case people have gotten into this far into the interview and they don't get yet why this is a huge issue. Like maybe they think, you know, to lose any animal is bad, sure. Maybe to lose honey, hypothetically. So you co-founded a company that produces honey.
Correct.
But okay, so I think it's weird to not have honey anymore. But let's say that wasn't people's biggest concern. Why should they still be worried about bees potentially going extinct?
Okay, so the ramifications of the bee or pollinators like the bee go extinct is worse than you could even imagine. Okay, mm-hmm. So first and foremost, honeybees are responsible for more than 30% of the food we eat, mm-hmm. period, full stop.
In terms of pollination?
In terms of pollination, I mean, and then we could take it a step further and say, well, you know, do you like dairy products? Do you like beef? Well, guess what? All of the food that these dairy cows mm-hmm. eat are from pollinator services like alfalfa and hay and things that bees pollinate.
Yeah.
Okay, we could take it a step further. Do you like wearing t-shirts? Well, most of t-shirts
I do.
Have cotton. And you know, what do we rely on to produce that? Pollination services.
Yeah.
Here's the biggest one. Do you like drinking coffee?
I all the time.
Well, guess what? That would be in danger. Mm-hmm. You would no longer be able to have, you know, that type of coffee for the price. I mean, it just is a fallout of catastrophic proportions.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's great that you make it clear in so many different areas that it might seem to people remote, a bee off somewhere, but they affect things that we consume and wear as you showed all the time. So in terms of this administration, there are these new concerns about these pesticides. Some of them are not new concerns. You said that the EPA is apparently not particularly interested in doing anything about it. Does Trump seem to show any interest in dealing with this issue?
I haven't seen a peep, wink nor snore about any interest in, you know, helping or pushing the agenda along to save pollinators.
Like, yeah.
This is the thing. The EPA is doing what they consider to be the best they can, right? But they're influenced by $1 billion plus industry mm-hmm. in these, you know, chemical substances. So, I mean, so just to put it in perspective, pollinating services worldwide are a $250+ billion industry, right? And so what we see is a, you know, fallout from these issues if bees disappear. Mm-hmm. The EPA, you know, they haven't really taken into consideration the true independent scientific research data. which definitively says these are extremely harmful for bees.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the issue with that is if you see it, do something about it.
Yeah.
And nothing is being done about it.
Yeah, and look, I know that when it comes to like climate change, they'll say, oh no, we don't trust the scientists. Some people will say, I think it's solar flares that are doing it.
Right.
So what exactly is killing 80-90% of the bees in some areas? Like kids with rocks? Like what is actually wiping them out?
So you actually kind of hit the nail on the head. I mean, obviously, you know, are the human species and human society is so interconnected with nature. Mm-hmm. Whether we want to admit that or not is another issue.
Yeah.
But we are, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is, you know, bees being such an important creature, you know, we're looking at a host of things. It's not just one thing that's killing it, but yeah, the fragmentation of land, the warming of the planet, mm-hmm. you know, erratic weather cycles, all of these things are causing, you know, the bees to lose habitable land, right?
Yeah.
The next is pesticides, herbicides, but we're also seeing immunological diseases mm-hmm. that come from, you know, these mites like the Varroa destructor mite or the Paracarpus woody. These mites are probably one of the bigger factors that are killing this. And what happens is these neonicotinoids and the sulfoxaflor, these pesticides, the mites are becoming very resistant and resilient to these things over the exposure for long periods of time. So it's not affecting them as much. The Varroa destructor mite is entirely dependent upon the bee. It really only is what, you know, attacks the bee, and it goes into the colonies. It creates the immunological disorders like the deformed wing virus, where we see, you know, the brood in different generations of bees, you know, becoming weaker and slower. Mm-hmm. You know, they used to pollinate for 9 days. Now they're only pollinating for 4 days.
Yeah.
You know, in 1988, we had 5 million hives. Today, we have 2.5 million hives. It's 50% loss.
Yeah.
This is catastrophic, and no one is doing anything on a bigger, you know, level,
like
on the national level to take it on. Nothing's being done.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, as I alluded to in the intro, this is the sort of issue that because it seems small or remote, like the creatures we're talking about are
right.
small and sometimes remote. It seems like something we don't have to focus on, but clearly we do because the consequences could be devastating.
Absolutely.
Kevin Cook, CEO, co-founder of Bee Golden, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Bring it down. Incredibly
appreciate
important.
It. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're gonna take a short break. We come back, Donald Trump launching a new feud over a hoax, this time against Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, after this.
A Swedish professor saying, you know, we can eat dead people, but that's not fast enough. So I think your next campaign slogan has to be this: we got to start eating babies.
So that little interaction there took place at AOC's monthly town hall in her district, presumably one of her constituents standing up and saying, I like that you're doing something about climate change, but you're not doing enough. We should eat babies. So look, immediately after that happened, and AOC handled it, I think, with grace and concern for this individual who clearly, best case scenario, had some mental health difficulties. As soon as it was over, she takes to social media and says, I know that people are already going crazy about this, tweets and articles and stuff like that. Look at this crazed AOC supporter who says we should eat babies to stop climate change. She said, let's be respectful because clearly this person has some mental health problems and we need to be understanding of that. Turns out it's actually much worse than that. But it didn't take long before some opportunistic fake journalists like Ryan Saavedra on Twitter started tweeting out the article and implying that not only was the woman crazy, but AOC is crazy too. Donald Trump Jr. picked that up and tweeted, seems like a normal AOC supporter to me. To which his father quote retweeted, AOC is a whack, spelled incorrectly, job. Because someone else said something he doesn't like, so he implies that a representative is a whack, spelled incorrectly, job. So that's where we're at. There's a couple steps beyond this. What do you think? How would you respond in real time to what was going
on
there?
So you're saying in real time.
Yeah.
In real time, I would have said this is why we should take a second, and regardless of what party they're in, for everyone who has to be like present at a town hall a city council meeting and hear everyone's concerns. Like, you have to have a little bit of respect because they do have infinite patience for everyone who comes in. And what's amazing about democracy is these voices get heard. Assuming that that is a real genuine actor who is not part of a vast black flag operation, false flag operation.
Yeah. What are you implying?
So I don't know.
You said assuming this person's a genuine actor. Well, not so much to the genuine part, but the actor part potentially. But before we get to that, AOC defended herself from Trump's misspelled attack against her, saying, "Better than being a criminal who betrays our country," which I really like. But then on top of that, Bernie Sanders comes in. One of my favorite tweets in a long time. "It's going to be a real pleasure defeating you." People throw around this idea that, you know, just hook that up to my veins. But just hook that up to my veins.
Yeah. So here's the thing of Trump. Everyone knows it. They feel it in their bones. There's a change. You know how you can feel like a change in the weather?
Mm-hmm.
This is the change. It was called out by Shep Smith the other day. He's like, things are changing and you can feel it. Like the barbs that you're hearing from the people on the left are actually now stronger than Trump's idiocy. Trump's like, what a whack job is based on seems like an average Trump AOC supporter, which isn't based in reality.
Mm-hmm.
But these like, everyone's saying, oh, Trump, you're scared. Because he is.
Yes.
And everyone who's on Trump's side, just close your eyes and say, to what extent do I just want to believe something?
Yeah.
Like, because that's what it is. You just want to believe it. And it's cool, but just be honest with yourself. Yeah. You want to believe this stuff. And then you have to ask yourself, is it true?
Mm-hmm.
And you need to go outside Fox. That's unfortunate because Fox is just an echo chamber, literally repeating terrible, stupid things over and over again.
And we're going to show that. He's terrified. You'll note. Can we bring up his tweet really fast, just for 1 second, before we move ahead? That AOC is a whack, misspelled job. Because there's something interesting that you'll notice about that. If we can see that tweet.
See one.
Do you notice the interesting thing about Trump's tweet there? He didn't at her. Because he wants to talk about her, but that dude is terrified. And that is why he has so rarely ever directly attacked her on Twitter, because he doesn't want the response. And so that's funny. I get a little joy out of that, just like with the Bernie Sanders one. But look, immediately, a lot of people were suspicious about this. And I know I've dragged this out too long, but this person who's standing up saying we gotta eat the babies, that's one thing. If you're saying eat the babies, that's one thing. If you're saying eat the babies wearing a shirt that says eat the babies, that's a slightly different thing. And for a rational person, it is a clue that this is perhaps not what it seems to be. Everybody got that immediately. Jeffrey Wright had responded, tweeting, "This smells like a setup."
And nothing looks like anything to him typically.
Exactly, great actor. We disagree on Bernie, but other than that, he's a great actor. But anyway, look, it did not take long for it to come out that, of course, this was a plant. It's a fake. LaRouche PAC, a far right group that supports Donald Trump, has taken credit for trolling Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez during a town hall meeting yesterday. An operative with LaRouche made headlines overnight after blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm talking about here. And so AOC acknowledges it. Turns out the woman yelling was a Trump supporter. Doesn't rule out potential mental issues. She is, after all, a Trump supporter. But good to know that they were not in crisis. Earlier this year, I was stalked and very nearly hurt by a disturbed person. I don't take chances and immediately try to de-escalate. And so, yeah, it was obvious. It wasn't just obvious to us and the cast of Westworld as well. It was obvious to all of the right wingers who were opportunistically pushing it. So Ryan Saavedra tweeted it out over and over and over. How crazy. Don Jr., Donald Trump. Over and over, crazy. If we bring up this, can we jump ahead to the screenshot of the article? Fox News, get rid of the babies. Distraught woman at AOC town hall urges eating babies to fight climate change. All of those people who were pushing this out, where are they now? Now that we know that it was a plant,
but that's
where are the tweets from Ryan Saavedra? Where's Fox News issuing an apology for implying that this was an authentic AOC supporter?
But like, look at what's happening. They are pushing out this false narrative based on the actions, the insane actions of what aren't AOC supporters.
Mm-hmm.
Look on the other side, like, there isn't an AOC supporter who's actually saying eat babies. There are Trump supporters who are sending like bombs to Congress people.
Yeah.
So Trump is the actual one who is, and I'm not saying all his supporters are this way. I hate that I have to say that, but like his support, he has a larger, an infinitely larger number of supporters who are actually threatening and committing violence.
Yeah.
Like that's it.
Yeah, we're gonna have more on that with Maxine Waters. But yeah, that was why the initial Donald Trump Jr. tweet seems like a normal AOC supporter to me. Dude, it's like it's a year from the year anniversary of a normal Trump supporter mailing pipe bombs to a list of his political enemies. Like maybe don't throw rocks when your supporters are throwing pipe bombs.
And also, eating babies won't do anything. Their lung capacity is far too small to have an effect on the carbon makeup of the atmosphere. It's the human beings. Unless a baby has adult-sized lungs, okay, don't eat it.
Yes. And by the way, here's why they did this. Because this is not a lie to the left that they're perpetrating. It's a lie to the right. They are trying to fool people on the right are trying to fool other people on the right that this is what the left is. Because as I tweeted this morning, there's no one they like lying more to than their own side of the aisle. And they do it because they know that even when it's shown, just like with every Jacob Wohl thing, it doesn't matter because on the right, they don't care if what they believe is true. They don't care about the obvious mismatch in 1 week of AOC supporter wants us to eat babies. Oh my God, that's terrible even though it's fake. And Trump literally talked about feeding migrant children to alligators. Nobody cares about that, not a peep from Trump supporters. Did he lose 1% in the polls after it was found out that he wanted to feed kids to alligators? No. No, that seems like a crazy made up sentence, but it's real and it's true.
Yep, I had an amazing conversation in like the back of a plane. Like I had a 12-hour plane ride and I was talking to like a mom from Manhattan Beach who is a Trump supporter. And the things that then these are like just people, she's like lives in a very wealthy part of town.
Yeah.
And she believes all this stuff that she heard on Fox News. And this eat babies to save the environment is like the next logical step in what itself was a lie. All the criticisms of the Green New Deal were like, oh, we're gonna have to have trains to Hawaii. You made that up.
Yeah.
That's not based in reality. And then they're talking about how crazy that is. And now the next step is babies. We're gonna eat babies.
Yeah.
And all of this is just to try to distract from the central problems facing this president, which is he admitted to a major crime, a high crime, a misdemeanor,
exactly,
and he should be facing impeachment. And the other thing is he's calling AOC do-nothings. She's doing these town halls to hear from her constituents and forward their concerns. And also further weed out corruption, she has the Just Society proposal, which tries to weed out corruption in government contracts, among many other things. He is not listening to that and he's not forwarding it. And that's a problem.
Yeah, it is a problem. It is a problem. I mean, you gotta give them credit for the mental flexibility to simultaneously believe that radical environmentalists want us to stop eating hamburgers but start eating children. That seems a little bit weird. And by the way, everybody here should, like I listed a whole bunch of people who pushed this story even though we all knew it was gonna end up being a plant. But they did it because it's convenient. Everybody here should tweet Tucker Carlson. He did it last night, immediately didn't wait to find out if it was true or what was going on. We will see. Will he issue a retraction on his show today? I kind of doubt it, but let's put some pressure on Tucker on this. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, Maxine Waters, more threats against her. She'll break it down after this.
He's the president of the United States of America. He's setting some of us up to be killed.
So that is Congresswoman Maxine Waters, who is no stranger to death threats under the Trump presidency, on MSNBC talking about how those threats continue to come. And she's tying it in with her concerns over the safety of the whistleblower, who Trump has already said should, in a perfect world, be executed, or at least implied it, and wants to interview with, which of course there's no reason for that whatsoever. We'll find out what the whistleblower has to say when they testify. What do you think about these threats? Is this something that I feel a need to continue to focus on it because I don't want threats of political violence to be normalized. But we do know that it's been going on for a long time.
Yes, Trump is intentionally doing this to inspire people to to threaten his political opponents as a way to distract, but without, he's kind of a sociopath. And so he has no actual concern for people's well-being.
Yeah.
And this is part of the strategy.
Yeah, and look, the threats haven't stopped Maxine Waters, but hypothetically for some people, I'd be concerned if you were threatening my family with death. For some of his critics, it might actually cause them to stop pushing back against him. Anyway, here's the full clip with Maxine Waters, or at least a good portion of it with her making the case.
He shouldn't be going after anybody. He's the president of the United States of America. He's setting some of us up to be killed. I have death threats constantly. There are a number of people who have been convicted for threatening to kill me. And when he does that, he's dog whistling to the white supremacists, the KKK, and the dangerous people. And we have stories about many of those white supremacists who do nothing but practice how they're going to be involved in a civil war and fight against this government. And this president is irresponsible in so many ways, aside from making us a target of these white supremacists and those who would kill us in a civil war. Some of us will be the first to be killed.
Yeah, and look, we broke down earlier this week. He was talking about the coup, and he quote tweeted Pastor Jeffress, who's talked about like a final solution against Jewish people and stuff like that. And we then saw different militia accounts tweeting out like, "You give the word on Twitter, and we're starting this thing."
Right, and then there's "This is not normal" is kind of a catchphrase at this point, but you have to examine why. Like if it's not normal because it's bad, and this is one of those examples. Some things are just not normal because people haven't done it before. Not normal used to be like calling out civil rights violations. You just didn't mention it. Mm-hmm. When you change that norm, you actually bettered society by talking about what's wrong with it. Yeah. But in this situation, it is not normal for a president to give these kinds of threats and encourage these kinds of threats. For obvious reasons. Yeah. You should be inspiring people to have discourse that betters society. But in this situation, he is saying things that intentionally cause folks to be afraid of violence and is actually inspiring people to commit violence.
Yeah. Yeah, and in terms of the normalization, I tweeted what in the past 3 years has been normalized that you wouldn't have expected? And people had a long list of replies. And some of them, by the way, I didn't expect were positive. Things that have now been, they're considered just normal that would have been considered too radical left in the past or something like that. And so that's good. But in general, I would say, I know a lot of people were worried with Trump coming in. John Oliver did his big show, like warning you of how things will change for you to be on the watch for it and to not allow things to be normalized. And I think, maybe I'm wrong, I think it's pretty clear we failed. I think that so much that Trump has done has been normalized and will be used by politicians in the future. And I find that to be a scary prospect.
And you can't, and the difference is Fox News. The difference is a party, like there's a fundamental underpinning of media and journalism that is liberal. Because it is just opening discourse and calling out corruption and calling out terrible stuff. And that's part of liberalism as classically defined. But in this situation, you have someone masquerading as journalists who has no qualms about literally just repeating party lines word for word over and over again. And that's the firewall. But it is breaking because you also have like Andrew Napolitano, Shep Smith, and Chris Wallace calling this out on a daily basis. That is the thing that is so impressive and should be called out.
And surprising. Anyway, we're gonna take one last break. Stick around. Welcome back, everybody, including Edwin. How's it going? So anyway, we unfortunately don't have a lot of time in this last block. But don't worry, we do have another story we want to get to. And it involves the lock him up chant. I was alluding to that earlier. So what happens in this sort of situation is, unfortunately, if you're not a member of TYT, you're not going to see our overtime clip that's going to happen a little bit later on. But I will reassure you, that is a situation that you can remedy. Go to tyt.com/John. You can sign up for a TYT membership. And then on either the website or on the incredibly convenient, awesome app that we have, you can continue to watch in the future, not only this show, but the extra overtime clips that are increasingly happening, considering how much news there tends to be.
Edit that part out. Just edit that part out where you're like, increasingly happen. That was embarrassing.
Edit you out, okay? I want you to go through the show, Cassie, and I want you to edit them all out.
If you're looking for something that's edited for air, you should watch Happy Half Hour tonight on TYT. We have Jocelyn Donahue from Dr. Sleep, which comes out in November. It's amazing. We talk about the huge scandal that's ravaging Rancho Cucamonga.
I haven't heard about that.
Oh my God! There's the Neighborhood Watch wrote a letter saying we are wealthy. Please don't give out dum-dums and Smarties. Just king size candy bars. It's amazing.
That is ridiculous. But anyway, the show used to be good when I was on, but it's gone downhill. Don't watch it anymore. Anyway, thank you everybody. For those of you who are going to be sticking around for the overtime, we're going to take a short break and then get to that last story. It's very interesting. How does a candidate deal with a lock him up chant? We'll have that for you. And thanks for watching throughout the week. See you on Monday, if not.
Bye-bye.
With Donald Trump under increasing threat from this impeachment inquiry, it is perhaps not 100% surprising that lock him up chants have begun. So when one of those starts, how should a candidate deal with it? Here at least is how Elizabeth Warren dealt with it.
I understand that Donald Trump and his supporters are getting really nervous, and they have a good reason to be.
Okay, so important context there. It seems like the chant did start because a Trump supporter was where they're not supposed to be, in back of the candidate with a big sign. But I don't care, doesn't matter. It's still a chant. I never liked the lock her up. I don't like locking him up either.
Yeah, we don't gotta. You know,
we don't
I mean?
Got it. We could. We don't got it.
I don't know. There's people that can. Like people that you need people out there. I don't know. Do you need an equal and opposite reaction to what Trump has?
Mm-hmm.
That's going on the offense, but that also allows him to like kind of in a roundabout way have defined the discussion.
Yeah,
so it's based on his language. I really like and am in favor of pushing the like, oh, he's scared.
Yeah.
He's scared.
Which is what she did.
And calmer than you are. Just calmer than you are, buddy. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what, like, I can tell very obviously that the president is scared now.
Yeah.
He's really trying.
It's the classic Rocky, at least I ain't breathing heavy.
Yeah, but like also, if you look at the talking points that the president's team has had to push out through Fox, they went through like 10 already since.
Yeah.
That fail. And now they're trying to push.
Or they use it and he sets it on fire, so they have to move to the next one.
Right, exactly. So that's why it fails. But now they're trying. Now they are just pretty much explicitly staying on Hunter Biden is corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Louisiana Congressman John Kennedy put out a bill recently. He announced that's going to make it illegal for the sons of politicians, the children of politicians, really high up in American politics, to do business with Ukraine.
Yeah.
But it's like if there's
specific.
Any, but it's oddly specific. It like says if you have 5% ownership in a company, you can't do it. But like, I'm for that. I'm for all of that.
See, I think that that's incrementalism. That's a half measure. I called weeks ago for politicians to no longer be allowed to have families because it's just trouble. And it should be retroactive, by the way.
But listen, I think there should be a rule saying that like you can't your kids can't do that kind of stuff. Or
yes,
at the
yes,
very
I
least,
think that is very
the
reasonable.
Republicans need to acknowledge that if there's any president in the history of presidents who needs to make his like roll boys back off the nepotism argument, it's this one. Because like if you're looking around, Ivanka Trump last year got like something like 36 patents okayed in China,
including voting machines,
against the backdrop of this trade war.
Yeah,
and all Trump's kids have had millions of dollars in real estate deals because of course they have.
Exactly, and they're getting speeches not because they're fabulous speakers, although I'm sure they are, but because of who their father happens to be. I don't know exactly how we weed this stuff out, but it should 100% be weeded out.
But bringing it back to Elizabeth Warren, like this, what she did is the right thing to do.
Yes.
Because it is the high ground, but it's still, and it pivots toward a better attack.
Exactly.
Than lock him up, which is their words, it goes toward he's scared.
I agree. So it'll be interesting to see as this, if this happens in the future to other candidates, how they'll handle it. I hope they do with at least as much grace as she did. By the way, just in case, me acknowledging that she did a good thing does not mean that I'm endorsing her for president. I support Bernie Sanders. If you can't take someone talking about another candidate, avoid political media because it's going to be a rough couple months for you.
How's your Elizabeth Warren tattoo doing?
It still itches.
Oh, sorry.
It still itches, unfortunately. Anyway, super fast update two. We're not going to go super in depth here, but we've been waiting to find out how much money she had raised in Q3. I only add this on because last night I did a ton of live videos about Biden and Yang's fundraising. She raised $24.6 million, which is a lot of money, a big jump for her. It is still slightly less than Bernie Sanders. So it looks like, you know, barring Delaney doing a lot better than anticipated, it looks like Bernie has raised the most money once again. So very impressive by Bernie Sanders, but also Elizabeth Warren, that's not nothing. That's $10 million more than Joe Biden.
And her number
keeps. That's a Kamala Harris above Joe Biden.
And each quarter her, yeah, as you have it here, but like that you just showed, her number keeps going up and up.
Whereas Biden's has gone down, and the way that campaign finance works, it's probably gonna continue to go down because his donors will have tapped out. His high dollar donors can only legally give so much.
And Bernie's is still a monster. And Bernie does a great job of the subscription model.
Exactly, and by the way, Bernie, so their numbers are very close, but Bernie Sanders had about twice as many donors.
Right.
Which is, that's amazing.
Which you know, makes it even less likely that they'll cap out.
Exactly, yeah, something like 99.9% have not. And so that is a reliable well to draw from for the rest of the primary.
And that's how money in politics should work.
Exactly, it should, like the only way that it should work. Okay, so thank you so much for joining us, both for the show and for the overtime. Love that you guys are either members or that you stuck around in some other way, perhaps that I don't know about. But anyway, thank you so much, Brett, thank you again. Great to have you here. You can watch Happy Half Hour or not. It's up to you.
Probably should though.
Maybe. Okay, we'll see you Monday.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.